Welcome back here with Dave and Faisal on QR Calgary and More Than Money. Faisal, let's talk a little bit about the headlines for a second here, because geopolitical tensions are rising, and it's on a lot of people's minds right now. We got to sort of try to dissect how this actually influences geopolitics and economics and how they work together.
And what crossed our desk is a book that we've seen called A World Safe for Commerce. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why we're bringing this guest on here is not only is he a professor out of the University of Virginia, not only is the author of this book, but okay, we can't say this too loud for our American friends. He has some Canadian ties.
That's right.
He's got some Canadian ties. So we not only do we get a U.S. economic and political viewpoint, but we also get it from a Canadian perspective of a person living in the United States now.
We've never had a guy from Virginia know where Calgary is. Dale, welcome to the show. Dale Copeland, professor of international relations at the University of Virginia.
It is really good to be here. And just full disclosure, I grew up in Victoria, British Columbia. So, but I have a good friend in Alberta, Calgary, Alberta. And my mom and dad were both born there. So there's connections there. We don't have to go across the Rockies and have that divide.
Well, welcome and thanks for joining us. Let's get right to this because we've got a 10-minute segment to do a very complicated topic. And Dale, I want to jump right into getting your feedback on essentially how you see economics in general influencing the current geopolitical landscape.
Straightforwardly, let's focus on the big issue, which is U.S.-China. We don't have a lot of trade, as you know, with Russia, and that's a separate issue. But U.S. and China are trading more than ever, over $700 billion this year. And there's been a lot of talk about decoupling or reducing that trade. And it's really up to the U.S. to decide, because China wants the trade, it needs the trade to grow and to help support its economic reforms at home. And it's got some structural problems, as everyone knows, debt and infrastructure problems. So China wants to trade. It's up to the U.S. to decide whether to keep trading with China. And my argument is a very straightforward one, and it's based on history and theory, namely that if another state like China has positive expectations about the future trade environment, thinks it's going to keep getting the trade, the resources, the markets, it will be quite moderate and want to be moderate so that it can keep the trade going. On the other hand, and as we learned from 1941 Japan, if those expectations of trade, future trade, turn sour, then all bets are off. That state would start to feel like it's being constrained or pushed into the ground. If it starts to decline, like Japan did severely in 1941, it may do some of the worst things that you can imagine, like attack the whole system. So my view is a very conditional one, but it's a very optimistic one. If the U.S. is smart enough to maintain positive expectations in China for future trade through its own trade policies, then peace in East Asia can be maintained and, in fact, supported and develop.
And that's a key point that you made, Dale, when you talk about if they want to maintain the trade with the United States. When you look at the economic influence of the United States, for sure, the number one economic superpower in the world. There are other regions that are growing in their view. If you look at EU as a full, you look at India, other parts of Asia, the population growing outside of the United States more than inside of the United States, so the use and so forth. And from a Canadian perspective, on some Canadian media viewpoints, they point out the U.S. being the bully. Do you think U.S. is being the economic or commerce bully that is being portrayed by some media outlets here in Canada?
Well, my view is a realist one, which means we focus on power politics and how both sides have an incentive to increase their position economically and in military terms, territorial terms, throughout history and currently to today. So I would put the blame, if there is to be blame, on both sides. China has had a rather restrictive trade policy, and it's manipulated its currency. It's stolen U.S. intellectual property and helped grow its economy through some of these practices. On the other hand, the U.S., especially under President Trump, imposed severe trade tariffs on China. It talked about a trade war it had to have with China. Now, Biden has largely backed away from most of that rhetoric. He's kept some of the restrictions on, but mostly on just very high-tech products like the under 15 or 10 nanometer chips, the ones that are made in Taiwan and East Asia. So those restrictions are still on. In fact, they're increased under Biden. But I wouldn't call this an economic containment or sabotage strategy by the U.S. If anything, in the last 6 months, there's been a thawing of relationships, of the relationship. She has basically told Biden directly that he will not and has no intention to invade Taiwan as long as Taiwan does not declare independence. That's a key condition for him. And Biden has said, we won't let Taiwan declare independence so that we can keep this relationship going. And indeed, you, Mr. Xi, but also Beijing, China, can obtain what you need, raw materials, oil, freely, as long as you abide by one condition. You don't attack Taiwan and you don't mess around in East Asia. So this is kind of a conditional logic that can work. It can work based around the power of trade in the modern environment. I'll say one last thing. China has had 40% of its GDP locked up in trade for the last decade. And that's the highest level since Britain in 1905. And as you know, a lot of British trade was with Canada, Australia, and the colonies, so to speak. So this is really a leveraging point for the U.S. And Biden is playing it well. He's playing it well in a moderate sense.
Dale, you mentioned Biden. You mentioned that the fact there's that also the Trump policies. We are now heading into a U.S. election fairly soon. From your perspective, who's best at the role for commerce, for the United States economically? Is it Trump or is it Biden?
I think that's kind of an obvious question, and I think you're trying to lure me down a certain path. I would simply have to say that Trump talks a mean game all the time. He talks about withdrawing from NATO, withdrawing from the East Asia. He's even talked about abandoning Taiwan, which upsets some Republicans. I don't think he would do it in the end. I think it's part of what he did in the early years, 2017, of his own administration, where he puts out these things, uses the rhetoric to, if you will, bully his own allies into spending more on their own defense so that the U.S. doesn't have to. And that includes Canada. And it's straightforwardly, he never really pulled any of those triggers. And I don't think he would. That doesn't mean to say that he won't return to his own Trump tariff policies. But it is worth remembering that he signed agreements with China in the last year to release or relax most of those tariff restrictions. And that regained or rebuilt a fairly healthy trade growth. And now it's over $700 billion. Under Trump, it was about $600 billion. So he did not do what many feared, which is economic disengagement from China.
We have under 1 minute left to go, Dale. When you look at, besides China, who's the next nation or region that the U.S. needs to be aware of, concerned of, and create better relationships with?
Well, Russia is the obvious one, in Europe and Eastern Europe, depending upon how you view that. I don't see any immediate resolution of that. Putin is determined, I think for partly glory reasons and not just insecurity reasons, to hold on to his war in Ukraine and perhaps even try to get more territory. I believe strongly that the Canadians and the Americans and the Europeans have to resist that and make sure he doesn't get away with taking over more of Ukraine. But you also have to look, I suppose, at the Middle East. But here, what's interesting is that most of the problems are indirectly caused by terrorist activity that I think Iran is supporting. And I think overall, the U.S. has contained Iran and China is helping. This is the irony, is that China is helping Iran, helping the U.S. to keep Iran relatively moderate. That's a relative phrase, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to leave it there. And I want to thank you for breaking down a complex topic into 10 minutes or so. It's been fantastic having you on the show.
Fantastic. Have me back anytime. I love to talk, as you can see.
Dale Copeland, professor of international relations at the University of Virginia, and also the author of A World Safe for Commerce. Okay, my friend, we've got to make retirement safe for people at our upcoming seminar.
That'll be on Tuesday, April 16th, 7 p.m. at the Silver Springs Golf and Country Club. You need to register at morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Yeah. Okay. Stick around. Should house prices be the number one priority for the federal budget? Let's talk about that after the break. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.